the Dark Queen, to the city, and to its master.
Leo didn't react, but something suggested it wasn't exactly the response he had been expecting. Or maybe it was the order of importance he didn't like. Me, then the city, and Leo last. After a pause that stretched too long, Leo said,
"That is acceptable. Take your place beside me. Drink of me, and I will drink of you."
Oh, crap. This would get Nicky. Edmund bobbed a kneel in front of me. One of those half-bow things people do in a Roman Catholic church.
"My mistress," he murmured. "Your leave."
I almost said sure, but caught myself at the last moment. The enforcer of the master of the city gives you leave. I carefully didn't give him leave by the power of the Dark Queen. No way. Ed gave me a cheeky grin before wrapping a solemn demeanor around himself. He turned and knelt before Leo, this time down on both knees, which seemed to please the MOC.
"Our city's Mithrins have been weakened by internal strife and civil war, by kidnap and imprisonment, by perfidy and betrayal, attacked from without by other clans and other masters. Attacked from within by those we should have been able to trust. Yet we have survived. Now we have cemented new alliances with the witches and with the werewolves of the Bighorn Pack. We've affiliated with the Mithrins of many cities, and our territory has grown to include Atlanta. With Sangre Duelo imminent, we must choose wisely those with whom we ally ourselves and our clans."
Edmund Hartley,
you have proven yourself wise in leadership, wise in the webs of Mithrin politics, and far more capable in La Destreza than anyone knew.
There may have been a hint of irony in Leo's tone. Yeah, Ed was quite the fighter.
"Should I fall in battle, will you accept the weight of responsibility for my clan, my city, my territories, my Mithrins? And my cattle?"
"I will."
"Should I fall in battle, will you take up my sword and my war?"
"I will."
"Should I fall in battle, will you seek to find peace with the conquerors? If there is no way to win, and all would die otherwise,
I will."
"Should I fall in battle, will you seek to protect the alliances and the Mithrins I have sworn to protect?"
"I will.
Moreover, I will avenge your life and your true death should you fall."
Leo smiled at that one, and clearly he hadn't been expecting it.
"I will govern wisely. I will listen to counsel. I will elevate the wise and teach the foolish. I will carry the long view as my master has foreseen it, has dreamed it, to fruition."
"I have chosen wisely,"
Leo said, surprised.
"I have served with honor, my master, and that will never falter nor fail."
Leo slid a hand into his tux jacket and removed something small and green, a jade knob, about the size and shape of a golf ball. He cradled it in the palm of his hand, and between his fingers a small wicked blade protruded. Ed held out his hand and Leo stabbed downward, puncturing Ed's thumb. Bright blood welled. I wondered who Ed had been drinking from to have such good skin color and such bright blood. He had a female blood servant, Marianne. I seldom saw her, but Edmund had to drink from someone. Leo lifted the thumb to his mouth and captured Ed's eyes with his own. The level of magic in the room rose, spiky and blazing, my skin itching. Leo took the thumb into his mouth and closed his lips around it, then sucked. Ed bowed his head without breaking Leo's gaze, as if the sensation of Leo's mouth sucking on his thumb was unanticipated. There was nothing erotic in the action. The smell of vamps rose on the air, suffocating. The magic intensified with it, until I wanted to scratch off my skin to get to the itch in my bones. Eli frowned hard. Alex shook his kinky curls and shivered. Leo pulled his mouth from Edmund's thumb and punctured his own thumb. He placed it at Edmund's lips, and Ed sucked in a ragged breath before taking Leo's thumb into his mouth. He sucked, eyes closed. He shivered. The magic crept up another notch. The temperature in the room went up a few degrees, and it was getting hard to breathe. I was pretty sure my skin was turning red. The air felt charged with electricity. My body ached. Beside me, Eli opened his mouth as though he was having the same trouble breathing as I was. His skin was glistening with sweat. Alex, on my other side, was breathing hard, as if he'd run several miles at a dead sprint. I tensed, ready to grab up my partners and carry them from the room. And then it hit me. Leo might expect something similar from me tonight. We'll drink Leo's blood, Beast thought at me. No. We'll drink Leo's blood. No. We'll no. Beast fell silent, and I knew she was playing with me like a cat with a new toy, batting me around, biting me a little, and batting me some more, watching me ricochet into the corners. Beast chuffed with amusement as Leo pulled his thumb from between Ed's lips. Leo said, "Tonight I officially appoint Edmund Hartley as my clan heir, and as heir to my position as master of the city of New Orleans and her territories." The magic blasted out, pain like forge-heated razors. I gasped, stood, and grabbed the boys, one beneath each arm. The pain fell away. The room chilled so fast the sweat on my skin felt like ice water. Alex sucked in a breath and started coughing. Eli shoved me away, his chin dropping with irritation as he peeled my arm and hand off him. Former Army Ranger didn't need saving, not now, not ever. Right. I dropped Alex, too. We all sat. We were okay. But dang. Leo pulled Ed close and guided him around the big desk, to the back, toward a chair on the end. Leo flipped a small brass nameplate up. It said, "Heir of New Orleans," and below that, Ed's name. Edmund looked drunk. Great. A blood-drunk primo, just what I needed. Not. Ed walked behind the dais and fell into his chair, sticking his thumb into the air. It was still bleeding, just a bit. A single drop that spiraled down his thumb, despite the fact that vamp's saliva clotted blood quickly. Leo, back around front, said, "Catherine and Alicia Fontenue, the master of the city requires your presence." This was said without a rise in magic, and without a hint of a smile. The sisters, looking more alike now that they were well-fed and healed of their injuries, came to the dais. The two blonde women dropped deep curtsies, long silk dresses, shushing in the still-as-undeath air. Leo pulled a sword that sounded as if the blade were taking a breath in the silence.
"Catherine and Alicia Fontenue, you have dishonored your vows," he said. "You have worked with our enemies, those who came from Europe to arm us, to conquer our territory. First by stealth and witch magic, by the raising of revenants, and now by the sangre duello. Katie, you did not trust us to save you and your sister, Madame Spy. You aided our enemies instead. You have endangered us all. How do you plead?"
I looked at the drain in the floor. I tried to catch Bruiser's eyes, but he was staring at the place where the edge of the blade rested on Katie's shoulder, at her neck. Katie, Leo's lover, Leo's friend.
"I plead guilty, my master and my friend," Katie said. "I did not trust that you would find a way to fulfill your vows to the city, defeat your enemies, and still save Alicia. I was a fool."
"Yes,"
Leo said, his face human in his hurt.
"Are you disloyal, my Catherine?"
"Never, Leo. My love, my best friend, my master."
"Do you trust me now, Katie?"
"I trust you with my undeath, with my heart."
She leaned into the blade, and a sliver of blood appeared at her neck where her shoulder sloped. She was cutting herself on Leo's sword. My entire body tensed, and I prepared to leap to protect the bare necks of two who were technically Leo's enemies, his friends and lovers, but enemies who had shared a bath with him only recently. Right, but indecision raked me with claws. Before I could decide to act, Katie continued.
With my blood, with my true death, should you demand it, I ask only that you protect my sister when you take my head. Leo, my love.
And danged if Leo, the master of the city of New Orleans and most of the southeastern United States, the baddest of the big, bad-fanged uglies, didn't have a pale pink tear gliding down his face.
Will you come to me with your fears and with your heart?
Leo asked her.
Always. I will never fail you again. I will trust you. I will fight with you. I follow your orders without fear.
Leo lifted the sword and placed it on the ebony table, where it settled with a rattle of steel on wood. He held out his hand.
I will drink of you, and you of me. We will know one another blood to blood, heart to heart, before these, our friends.
Katie placed her hand in his and stood. With the little knife, Leo stabbed down. Then he stabbed his own thumb. And as he took her thumb into his mouth, she took his. Katie groaned as if they were alone in bed. Her head went back and her knees went weak. Leo caught her and held her close. Katie's back arched. Just you. It was a little too much sex and blood for me. I looked away and kicked Alex to look away, too. He ignored me. Katie moaned again. Ick. When the public mutual licking and moaning was finally over with, Leo said,
Catherine Fontenot, you are heart of my heart. And soul of my soul,
Katie whispered to him.
But I cannot allow you to remain with me.
No,
she whispered.
Leo, my love, no.
Leo took a breath that sounded thick and painful.
You are banished from my clan home. You and your sister, Alicia.
Katie, who had been mostly standing during the blood reading, fell to her knees, one arm outstretched as if pleading, her hand still in Leo's, her face blanched, her mouth hung open. She sobbed silently. I could smell her horror and her fear. I had read about banishment. Being banished meant being taken to a wilderness and set free, far from the nearest human. Not that there was such a place in this day and age.
You are now,
Leo smiled gently at her,
bloodmaster of Clan Fontenot, and banished to Atlanta, where you will take up the mantle of master of the city.
No!
Katie shouted, her fists bunching as if to sock him. She jerked back on the one in Leo's hand, whipping against him. He held firm and she struggled, almost growling,
I refuse to be master of clan or city.
Okay, that was a surprise. A vamp refusing power. Alicia at her side was still a stone, her eyes slowly vamping out. Katie's voice rose and she yanked against his hold.
I refuse the city. I am made for pleasure, not boardrooms. I am made for beds, not negotiations. Tu sais ça?
I recognized the phrase. You know this. I had been among the French-speaking vamps too dang long. I was understanding French. Leo actually laughed and, with the back of his free hand, wiped his face clean of the tear track.
Dearest Catherine, Catherine, mon amour, you have ruled this city and her humans for 100 years through the web of hedonism and decadence. Did you think I was so foolish that I did not know? Did you think me unaware that Katie's Laetes was the center of your web? That you had spun silken snares about your clients and victims? That they smiled in pleasure and desire as you strangled them in a snarl of coercion and bled them dry of favors with extortion? You have been my hand to power for far too many years to count. You have served me, even as you led.
Katie went still, standing, her body bladed to Leo, as if she might yet fight, or as if she might pull away and run, or as if she might pull a weapon and kill her master.
Je ne renierai pas.
I will not something.
You will, Leo insisted. You will rule as master of the city of Atlanta, as the blood master of Clan Fontenot, with your heir Alicia at your side, and your enforcer, Romore, as your sword, and Tom as your primo.
Katie's eyes were wide and frenzied, shooting to every person in every corner of the room as if looking for allies or a way out. And then Katie heard what Leo had said. He had given her an enforcer only a few days past. He had now given her an heir. He had been planning this for a while. Leo was making a new clan, one loyal to him. Then it hit me. The MOC was making more than one new clan tonight. He was rebuilding his power base. Leo smiled into Katie's dawning realization.
You have all you need to govern and control Atlanta. You will care for her Mithrins and convert her murderous Naturaleza to the way of the Mithrin. You will ensnare and protect her helpless cattle, her politicians, and her moneyed and powerful. He paused. And you will swear to me as master and ruler of the southeastern United States of America.
Katie's eyes flashed black fire.
You bastard, she hissed. Au contraire.
Leo lifted her hand and kissed her fisted fingers.
I am the son of my father, planted in my mother's belly, born in wedlock. My name is listed in a family Bible and recorded in official parish papers.
Leo was laughing at her. Katie's fangs dropped down slowly with a faint click of the hinges. Her eyes vamped out. The sclera bled scarlet and the pupils went wide, eclipsing the irises. Black holes in a bloody sea.
For how many years have you planned this? It was never planned, my love. But this move has been on the board forever. I refuse. You need me here. You need me to fight at your side. You need me to ensnare our ancient enemy once again. I will not leave you.
Leo pulled her into an embrace and said gently, sweetly,
Then I will have my Honorios take you and your sister to the mountains of Georgia, far from the nearest habitation of cattle, far from the nearest protection from daylight, far from food and safety. They will drain you both, in the Honorio way, and drop you from a helicopter.
La foot est à moi, Alicia said.
Katie whipped her head to her sister, still standing at her side. I had practically forgotten her, in the soap opera of Leo and Katie playing out on a public stage. Madame Spy was biting her knuckles with her own fangs. Clear, human-looking tears ran down her face. She shook her head.
Je suis la coupable. Tu t'es de ma faute. Tu t'es de ma faute. Catherine,
Leo demanded, his voice low. Katie whipped her head around to Leo.
He said, Nous vous offrons le salut, acceptez notre miséricorde.
I'd learned a lot of French just being around HQ, but I must have looked confused because Edmund said from the dais to me,
Alicia says it is all her fault. Leo offered her mercy.
Leo said,
Ne me faisez passer vous tuer toute la deux.
Edmund said,
Do not make me kill you both. Nous acceptons votre offer et jurons fidélité,
Alicia said. Edmund translated.
We accept your offer and swear loyalty.
C'est pour cela que je suis né.
Edmund murmured.
I will govern. It is what I was born for.
In English, Alicia said,
Your conniving lover made certain that I was trained in duplicity and governance. Ask him.
You! Katie leaned away from Leo, who tightened his arm on her waist. She whipped her eyes widely around the room as if she felt a noose closing over her neck. Her hair slid out of its coil in an ash blonde swoosh. her shoulders hunched, fangs flashed in the pale lights. Then she blinked, slowly, as if understanding was dawning. Katie turned her head in one of those inhuman motions the fang heads had. In a totally different tone, she said to Leo, "You." Leo shrugged lightheartedly and kissed the back of Katie's fingers again.
"I must needs come to visit my most loyal servants."
He uncoiled her fist and lifted her index finger, kissed the tip.
"There must be comfortable beds and well-trained servants."
He lifted the middle finger, kissed, and deep baths. Katie laughed, half hysterical. Her shoulders, which had hunched up for battle, dropped.
"No, Leo. Please do not send me from you."
"I must. You have betrayed me. Do you accept your chastisement, your sentence, and your elevation in status?"
"Tu es une creature maléfique,"
Edmund said.
"You are an evil creature."
Leo said, "I am."
"However," Katie said, "j'accepte ton jugement."
"I got that one all by myself. I accept your judgment."
"Call for your blood servants to pack your clothing, Catherine, and go to Fontenot Clan home and the council chambers of Atlanta. You and your traitor sister have much to heal there in the wake of the previous master of the city and his natural laser ways."
Katie threw herself into Leo's arms and sobbed.
"You send me to a dreadful place. They do not even speak French there."
Leo chuckled and unwrapped himself from her.
"They are not so without culture. At least it is in Charlotte, with its nouveau riche, or Charleston, of excentricists and Yankees. Or Richmond, with its nothing these days."
Leo had just insulted three of the South's largest and most powerful cities. I suffocated a grin. He looked at Brandon and Brian Robert standing beside Bruiser.
"Take them. See that they are in Atlanta by morning. My jet is fueled and awaits you. And if May du Espion attempt to convince you to hide them here in the city, or to stay with them in Atlanta, you will stake them in their bellies until such time as they are ensconced in their new clan home."
Katie shot Leo a murderous look and gathered up her skirts in a righteous fury.
"Tomorrow night,"
Leo continued to the twins, amused by her actions,
"you will see that the Georgian Mithrans swear fealty to her, and that any remaining Naturaleza who refuse to sign a Vampire Carta of the Americas and swear loyalty to their new mistress are beheaded. I believe that Gregoire has provided you a list."
Vampire Carta of the Americas? That implied Leo had created his own document. They nodded again, though this time a bit reluctantly. They were swearing to kill vamps, creatures they loved and served. Honorios could kill easier than I could, and without a single weapon. Bruiser's gaze had moved from Leo to me, watching my reactions. I tilted my head to show I understood, that I could deal with it. And really, how could I do anything else? I'd killed so many fangheads since I came to Nola that some vamps referred to me as the Enforcer Executioner. I had so much blood on my hands that I had befouled a baptismal pool when I jumped in. I was something and someone to be feared and hated. I tightened my lips, fighting a self-disgusted quiver, and looked back at Leo, who was still talking to the Roberts.
"With the second dawn, when Clan Fontenot is entirely in power, you will return here. Alicia will remain in Atlanta to rule. Catherine will return with you for a fortnight. Do you understand?"
The Robert twins nodded once, the actions mirror images. Katie's mouth popped open and fangs retracted as she laughed. She threw her arms around Leo.
"You are allowing me to return for the sangre duelo?"
Leo speared Katie with a look that held centuries of passion and trust and emotions I had no name for. He nodded and she said,
"Je t'aime, and I you. For my Catherine, I have one last task, Do you stand by my side as I fight and live? Or fight and die?
Leo released Kaney. The two women curtsied, deeply and gracefully, and remained in that position of obeisance for 10 Mississippis before the B-twins stepped forward and each took a hand of the Fontenot women, lifting them to their feet. As a group, they stepped back and swept from the room. "The long view," I muttered. Leo had just punished Katie and Alicia by giving Katie the one thing she didn't want, responsibility. Provided a stable rule for Atlanta by making sure Alicia was there to do the political stuff. Permitted Katie to return to NOLA so she could participate in combat. And reset a clock that he could twist in many ways. Wily and devious and scheming.
"That was freaking cool,"
Alex whispered. He was right. It was. Leo was a snake in the grass. I feared it boded badly for me. Chapter 9. Huggy, huggy, kiss, kiss.
Ming Zoya, former blood master of Clan Mirkenis, and Ming Jane of Clan Glass, rise and kneel before me,
Leo said, clasping his hands together behind his back. This was unexpected. I looked again at the drain in the floor, but Leo had no reason to want the Mings dead. So far as I knew. The Asian sisters stood and walked down the aisle to the front, where they knelt at Leo's feet. Ming Zoya was wearing unrelieved black pants, shoes, and a jacket that was woven to show a large dragon shimmering across the back when the light caught it just right. Her face was made up with rice powder, scarlet lipstick, and strong black eyeliner. Her hair piled high on her head in an intricately braided bun. She was a very different woman from the starved, skeletal, raven-insane vamp pulled from a watery pit. Ming Jane of Glass was wearing scarlet. Their colors clashed and blended, like lava and stone. The Mings were graceful, delicate, and they carried themselves with deadly balance and purpose, even kneeling.
Ming Jane of Clan Glass, Leo said. I give you leave to petition the Master of the City of New Orleans for position of Master of the City of Knoxville.
Ming Jane fell still, the marble statue stillness of the undead. She took a breath needed for speech and bowed her head to the floor.
My master is gracious, wise, and kind to this most unworthy Mithrin. I will file all necessary petitions post-haste.
The sisters started to rise, but Leo spoke again.
Ming Zoya, former bloodmaster of Clan Mirkenis, Leo said. Will you swear to me, to protect and guard my city, to guard me, to fight by my side, to avenge my death, should I fall and die true dead?
Ming sucked in a shocked breath, as did all the gathered.
Master, I asked you questions, Ming Zoya. I do. I will. Always and forever.
You lost your home, your people, your scions and your cattle, your clan. Yet you showed no fear. You refused to relent. You refused to give in to your captors. I would have you back at my side, as bloodmaster of Clan Mirkenis. What say you?
Ming started to shake. Bruiser looked nonplussed, and then a wide, delighted, surprised smile swept over his face. Ming said,
My master, how? My clan has been disbanded, my scions and properties dispersed.
In the last months, you did not rule well, Ming Zoya. Your people were afraid, and your clan home was controlled by fear. Yet, there are 14 Mithrans of former Clan Mirkenis who have spoken for you, and are willing to return to you. Are there others among my people you would claim for your clan, if they and their bloodmasters are willing?
Aye.
The word broke sharply and Ming stopped her, her shoulders going back with an almost military posture. When she spoke again, it was with the formality of fang heads in ceremony.
I pondered much while buried in water with the dead. I request the time to choose scions and blood servants who are willing to join Clan Myrkenis. I will do so over the next 24 hours and present them to the master of the city tomorrow night at this same hour.
I proclaim it so,
Leo said.
Your former clan home is empty, and the witches, to whom it was offered, have been approached and are willing to accept another property. Myrkenis, clan home awaits you.
He looked back and forth between the sisters.
You must rule with kindness, with the awareness and understanding of failure and error. With mercy.
Forgive me, my master.
Ming Zoya dropped her head in a bow.
But Clan Plessier has never ruled with mercy.
I, too, have learned much in these last 3 years.
Elas slanted his eyes at me, and his lips did a little quirky smile. I sat back in my chair. 3 years was about how long I'd been in Nola.
I now demand all of my sworn bloodmasters follow the new guidelines, amended to the old Vampiric Carta. Will you so swear?
Without seeing these new ways of thinking and acting?
Yes.
Zoya answered, her reluctance almost imperceptible.
I will trust my master to require only the possible. My sword is yours. My loyalty is yours. My heart is yours. And if I have a soul, it too is yours.
Leo pricked his thumbs with his blade, pricked both Ming's thumbs. They each took the other's thumb into their mouths and sucked. There was nothing sexual in this blood exchange, though I knew Leo and the Mings had been more than friendly in times past. They all closed their eyes and leaned closer, as if each using the other for balance. I checked the time. This was all huggy-huggy, kiss-kiss. But boring. I had things to do, werewolves to hunt and creatures to fight. Leo and the Ming stopped the blood exchange and swallowed. Leo said,
Ming Zoya, your loyalty is rewarded. Clan Myrkenis is re-established, with all attendant properties and rights and incomes. Go, attend to your restored clan. Build it. Protect your people. Ming Jane, provide petitions for master of the city status.
The Mings backed away and bowed so low it looked as if their heads might touch the floor. Vamps are really limber.
I am yours,
both Mings said, mostly in unison.
May my clan and my progeny die forever true dead, should I ever be disloyal.
The Mings swept out of the council chambers. Just wow. Leo called two other vamps to the front for some small approval, which I ignored, until he called Callan to the front. Pretty Callan, young vamp with a boxer's shoulders, cyclist's thighs, and angel's face. The vamp who had kidnapped me in the middle of a magical storm and hidden beneath a boat in the Gulf of Mexico, waiting for the sun to set so he could drink me down. Leo asked,
You are accused of betrayal, conspiracy, and traitorous actions. How do you plead?
Callan tossed back his beautiful locks and stood straight and tall. Not guilty, for I serve the master of all Mithrins, Titus Flavius Vespianus. Leo stared at Callan, unmoving in that creepy vampy, still as a graveyard statue way. Then he took a fluttering breath and said,
Judgment shall be decreed by the Outclan Priestess.
I had pretty much forgotten Sabina and the others on the dais behind the black table, because they didn't breathe or fidget or blink. Typical undead. Sabina stood, her robes making a starchy shushing sound, and said softly,
For your crimes, against the Enforcer and against the rule of Mithrin decrees, and the law of the Vampira Carta. You will be beheaded.
In his Carolina accent, Callan sneered. Unsurprising judgment by picking any and a coward who owns her. He threw back his shoulders and finished. Against an unarmed man.
Oh, he didn't,
Alex whispered.
Or you may test your skills against the master of the city here and now,
a woman's voice said. Vamp fast, someone behind me tossed Callan a sword, and I caught a whiff of lemon. Everything happened fast, fast, fast. The condemned vamp snatched the sword out of the air, vamped out, fangs snicked down, eyes bled scarlet, centered by widening pupils, blacker than death. Edmund leaped into the crowd, after the sword-throwing woman. I was sitting forward, drawing a weapon. I stood. Before I could blink, Callan whirled the sword and stabbed at Leo. He leaped back. Sabina took the sword thrust. She jerked to the side just a fraction, just enough to miss the center of her throat. The blade struck through the left side of her throat near her collarbone. It exited her nape, bloody. Callan twisted the sword, cutting to the side, taking out the left carotid jugular tendons. Still twisting, he yanked back on the sword. The blade came free. Sabina toppled. Leo leaped over the table to catch her. I screamed. What came out was mine. I hurtled between and over the chairs in front of me, raced to the front. This I can do. Vengeance for Sabina.
Attack most foul. This is the responsibility of the enforcer executioner,
Leo said from behind the table where he cradled Sabina. Callan stepped back, watching the rear of the room, his face frozen, eyes wide. Whatever was happening back there, it wasn't what he expected. And I smelled lemons on the air. Someone sworn to Clan des Citrons was here. I never took my eyes from Callan. Eli stepped close and took my gun, scooping Leo's long sword from the tabletop and placing it in my right hand. Beast fast, I drew a vamp killer for two-handed fighting.
Prepararse para la muerte,
I said, and I attacked. My sword swirled and circled, steel edges glittering in the lights. Beast murmured deep inside. Killing claws. I stepped inside Callan's guard. Beast swept out with a killing claw and cut across Callan's chest. We stepped back. First blood, I said.
Little bitch, always in the way. Damn wolf should have killed you.
Wolf? The red wolf from Andromeda's jewelry shop. Or Ziggy's and Champ's pack. I cleared my mind, letting the meditation of the skinwalker shapeshift fill me with the emptiness of battle. My blades whirled faster, meeting and sliding and grazing apart. My feet settled into perfect balance, long and short transverse steps sliding me inside his reach and out. Callan lunged, again, again. Our blades clanged and shushed along the length, gently, as I knocked his aside. Trapping his blade with my vamp killer, cut at his neck, shoulder, the wrist of his sword arm. The zen of battle. The room around me faded, disappeared. There was only the single blade before me and the movements of the creature who wielded it. Cut, cut, cut. Blades, a percussive steel melody. Edges sliding, shushing, tapping. My body dancing, dancing, moving through the forms of La Destreza, feet spread, weight balanced, focused on one thing. This dance.
Jane Yellow Rock, desist.
Cut, cut, cut.
Jane Yellow Rock,
the words roared.
Desist.
Leo, commanding. I laughed, showing teeth. He said other words softly then.
Dalanegei, digadoli, stop now.
I cut and cut.
Dalanegei, digadoli, halewista, hawatsu, stop, please.
I blinked, stepped away from Callan. I was blood splattered. Callan was sliced into ribbons. I felt a blinding pain on my right side. Callan fell to his knees on the marble before me. His blood trickled into the drain. Instantly, I understood what I had done. In meditation, I had reverted back to the punishment I'd dealt to the first man I killed. Sickness rose in my throat, but I forced it down. I lifted the long sword back across my body. With all beast's strength, I cut. Callan's head toppled, fell. So did Callan's blood-slicked body. His sword hit the black floor. I stood over him, watching as his blood puddled between the marble tiles in geometric patterns, flowing toward the drain. Alex clicked off his phone, but before he did, I saw Aggie Onefeather's name on the screen. He had called her to get Zalagi words to make me stop. He had given the words to Leo.
Bring Edmund to me for healing. Find Dominique, who tossed a sword to the prisoner, and bring her to me, Leo said. If she is still in council chambers, her true death is now mine to give.
Dominique, the traitor brought back from near true dead. Dominique and Adriana, an arch-enemy I had tried to kill for years, had been lovers. I had recently killed Adriana, and that gave Dominique a big reason to want me dead. And she was here at the same time as the scent of lemons. Ah, that was why Leo and Gregoire had brought Dominique back and set her free, to track who she had been working with. Dominique had sworn to Clan de Citron. A tiny puzzle piece fell into place, finally. Jean. Leo was wearing that blank vamp expression. There was a reddish haze around him, and I blinked, trying to clear it away. Raised my hand and wiped my eyes. My wrist came away bloody. I realized there was blood in my eyelashes, in my hair.
Eli, take Jane to heal.
I felt the world shift, and I realized I was in Eli's arms. He carried me from the room, moving fast through a dizzying maze of hallways, into the locker room across from the gym. He placed me on a bench, and a woman knelt at my feet, removing my shoes and cutting off my clothes, wrapping me in white sheets that quickly turned scarlet. I watched for a while until the pain and the stench of my own blood brought me around. I looked at my stomach. There was a deep cut there. Callan had been a mediocre swordsman. I was actually better. But just there, at the end, when I stepped away and before I positioned for the final cut, he had lunged. I hadn't blocked or parried. Callan's sword had run me through.
Jane used killing claws. Jane is good hunter. Trespasser in hunting territory is dead. But Jane is stupid, Kit. Should have used ambush and taken head first.
Can I be both? I asked aloud. Good hunter and stupid Kit?
Don't know, but you are for sure bleeding to death, the woman said.
I knew her. She had helped me dress the first time I put on the proper fighting clothes for blood duels. I couldn't remember her name.
I'll take it from here, Eli said.
The woman didn't move and his voice took on a tone I wasn't accustomed to hearing from him. Command voice.
Get out.
The woman rose and left the room.
Jane, shift. I'll bring Beast a plate of steaks.
Oatmeal. For after. With sugar and milk. I could hear the amusement in his voice when he said,
I remember how you like it.
Today has sucked, I said. I fell forward and let the gray between take me.
Beast kicked out of bloody cloth. Stretched through hips, front legs out, chest and belly, shook pelt, stretched again, looked over parts of body, looked in mirror, liked mirror, was better than water in lake, but lake had beaver dam, remembered beaver dam, and beavers, hard to catch but fun to chase in water, looked for Eli, looked for cow meat. No cow. Chuffed. Eli did not appear. Went to door and chuffed again. Was hungry. Made kit sound, peep and mewling. Door opened. Eli looked down at Beast, laughing. Poor hungry kitty cat. Beast snarled, showing killing teeth. Be nice. I have a roast fresh from butchering. Beast backed away from door, sniffing, nostrils opening and closing, sat and waited. Eli entered and placed big metal bowl on floor, full of blood and meat. Not watery blood, real cow blood. Beast licked and slurped and tore into meat, was good.
Don't laze over your food too long, Eli said. Leo has plans.
Beast looked up from blood and licked jaw, raspy tongue cleaning lips and muzzle. Like Leo. Have seen Leo fight in drops of water. Leo is like Kit. Must be protected. We'll give drop of time water to Jane and see what Leo does. Finished dead cow. Was good dead cow, belly full. Beast lay down on cool floor and woke Jane. Gave body over to Jane.
I came to lying on the floor.
Dang cat, I grumbled.
I stood and went to my locker. I hadn't checked it in a while, and I had no idea if it still had clean clothes in it or not. I found a dark gold sweater and black slacks, a pair of dancing shoes. Undies, thankfully. I wasn't in the mood for commando. I dressed and braided my hair in a sloppy single braid, hearing a knock at the door. I'm decent. When I turned around, Eli stood in the doorway, holding a bowl of oatmeal. He came in, placed the bowl on a small shelving unit, and pulled a long bench up to it. I sat and scarfed down the oatmeal, having in a bowl. I used a lot of calories shifting into any form, so no matter how well I ate in one form, I needed to eat again when I shifted back. Update, I said, around a mouthful of oats and sugar and milk. Dominique tossed Callan a sword. You sliced Callan to pieces and beheaded him. He got in one good stab and nearly killed you. Edmund attacked Dominique barehanded and took a dozen stakes to the belly and heart. Dominique got away. Up through a ceiling tile, and a tunnel we didn't know was there. Leo healed Sabina. Daisy Mooney healed Ed. You shifted. I grunted. Ate some more. Alex saw an anomaly on the screens during the fight. There was a witch in the council chambers. My head came up. Alex says he's talked with Molly and she can't think of a way, other than the lasers, to get tech to recognize magic. I grunted and shoved in another bite. Where's the witch now?
It came out, eerie wit now, but Eli understood. The anomaly fled council chambers. We caught sight of it near Leo's office. We have the MOC and Sabina under Derek's personal protection.
I grunted again, ate some more of the sugary delight.
We heard from Philip Hastings.
His voice was toneless and sincere. I looked up at him, battle face. This would be bad news.
Bighorn Pack tracked down three of the Rogue Pack. The Rogues had targeted Nola's homeless population and the Grindelow had already killed them. The Grindies and the Wolves gathered the bitten humans into an empty boxcar to await the full moon.
The full moon. When the humans would change and then, if they had no control over their werewolves, would die at the claws of the Grindies, or stay human and live. I looked back at the oatmeal, wondering if I could do something to stop that, knowing that I could not. Knowing that the humans' fate was already decided by the wear taint in their blood. I shoveled in more oatmeal, though now it was tasteless.
Bighorn Pack has set up a feeding regimen and showers and portable toilets for the bitten men. They'll be well cared for until the full moon. But they will be prisoners.
I grunted, hating this. Hating not being able to save people who would die because of no fault of their own. This sucked.
You meditated when you fought,
Eli said. Zen, I said. Though it came out, Jin. And in a meditative state, you are a fighting beauty to behold.
Ducky, I said, or tried to. It came out sounding obscene, and Eli chuckled. I swallowed and said, I sliced and diced him to pieces.
And took his head. And your rep as a fighter just went through the roof. 5 challengers from the Sangre Duelo just dropped out.
He watched my face and answered before I could ask.
Yeah, word got out fast.
More softly, he added,
Andromeda Prio is dead.
I looked up in confusion.
Andromeda, the woman in the jewelry shop. She's dead. Her store was shot up this afternoon in what looks like a gang shootout. 6 victims, 3 gangbangers, Andromeda, a blood servant who smelled like lemons, according to the surgeon who worked on her, and a homeless man who had been sleeping in the doorway.
I closed my eyes, remembering the woman who had offered me a way out the back when she believed I was in danger. The woman who had been willing to defend a stranger. I pushed down the need to hit something, to save a woman who couldn't now be saved. Hate pack hunters, Beast thought. Yeah, I thought back. I hate helplessness more. Hiding the need for vengeance, I asked. And the lemon-smelling woman?
She was still under from anesthesia when she disappeared from the recovery department. They think she was carted out in a laundry basket right in front of the sheriff's deputy on watch.
De Citron's got her back.
Looks like it. Let's go, we have more ceremony tonight.
I wiped my face and gathered up my weapons harnesses. I'd rather be chasing down and cutting up Clan de Citron. Ceremony is boring, I said.
Not when you're around.
I grunted a final time and led the way to the elevator. Back in the council chambers, I studied the hole in the ceiling and the small brick-walled tunnel beyond it. The space was maybe 30 by 30 inches and black as pitch. Eli craned his body around and sent a tight beam of light into the hole. Mr. Prepared always had a flashlight on him. The tunnel went straight up for about 15 feet and then angled hard to the left. Right at the angle there was a smear of black. I sniffed and thought I caught the faintest scent of old fire and fresh lemons. Soot? I asked. Eli said,
Boost me up to your shoulders.
I bent my knees, hands on the floor. He stepped on my shoulders, the hard rubber of his boots cutting into my muscles. I didn't complain and stood to give him height, watching as he fingered the brick at the lower edge. It was broken and shattered evenly all around.
Hammers. I'd guess there used to be a fireplace in this corner and it was removed during some renovation.
There was,
Leo said calmly from behind us.
In 1917.
Where does it go at the angle?
Eli asked, stretching to the left, his light shooting a thin beam of illumination up the shaft. His voice, carefully unemotional, Leo said,
Down to this small library on this level, and up to the fireplace in my office.
I bent my knees again and Eli leaped to the floor. I brushed off my jacket and stretched. Let's check out your office, I said grimly.
Derek said,
I'll check out the library.
Leo's office had been trashed. Upholstered furniture had been ripped open. The hanging draperies that hid the lack of a window in the inner room had been yanked down and lay in piles in the corners. And objet d'art had been shattered against a wall. Said wall was full of fist-size holes.
Nothing of value was taken,
Leo said softly. And you know that how? I asked, standing at the end of the small hallway where the space opened out into the office proper.
Because the wall she punched through is new. The hidden storage place is empty.
Leo pursed his lips and walked closer to the destruction. He scraped a finger along one hole and then held it up to the light. There was a smear of soot and blood on his hand, along with the dust from busted wallboard. Leo sniffed.
Lemons.
He looked back at me.
The storage area was removed after the police conducted the investigation into the death of Sophia.
The black were-leopard who bit Rick Lafleur. Within it were papers related to the families and histories of many of the Mithrins in my domain, including Dominique's.
And? I asked. Leo shrugged slightly and sighed.
And there were once two objets de magie hidden here. The amulets were removed and now reside with Sabina in her lair.
I texted Alex to check on the Vamp Cemetery, where the Outclan priestess slept by day, and got back a nearly instantaneous response of, "Nada. Cameras show silent as the grave. LOL." Then he texted, "Our house is fine." Next, I texted Derek about the library. He texted back, "Pair of shoes in front of fireplace. She came in here. No sign returning this way."
"Leo, would you be so kind as to open the secret tunnel from your office?" I asked.
"Secret?"
he asked. "Hardly."
Leo walked to the wall beside the desk and tapped the lever that opened the access to the formerly secret tunnel. Everyone knew it was there now, including the several law enforcement agencies from that investigation into the death of the woman who had bitten Rick. The small doorway opened, and the scent of lemons whooshed out. My cell dinged with a text from Alex. On the screen were the words, "Got it. Dominique didn't disable cameras in Leo's office. Took nothing so far as I could see. Took escape tunnel and out through outer wall, into dark SUV, got plate, running, tracking through traffic and security cameras. Note, anomaly was with her. Got a partial visual. Cleaning it up."
What was she looking for?
"Alex is on it. I'll take off and..."
"You will return to the council chambers,"
Leo said in his command voice, a kingly, brook-no-refusal tone.
"We have unfinished business."
I wanted to disagree, but... "Yeah, okay." What the heck? Alex could run this search through his tablet from the chambers. It would be a long night. Back in the chambers, I ignored things for a while and let Leo's politics and the fallout run through my mind, combining tonight's actions with the coming Sangre Duello. He had cemented things with Nola's previous four clans and restored a Nola fifth clan, and he'd given himself loyal masters of the cities of Atlanta and Knoxville to add to the loyalists in Sedona, Seattle, and other vamp cities. And he wasn't done yet.
"Jane Yellow Rock."
Pulled from my reverie, I narrowed my eyes at Leo, but otherwise I didn't move. The business had progressed to smaller, less consequential things, and I thought Leo had forgotten about us. Looked like I was wrong. Snake in the grass.
"No, yes, my lord and master," he asked.
"No." Leo laughed. He raised his hands and his magic coiled into the room, less painful than before, but still hot and biting.
"Jane Yellow Rock, enforcer to the master of the city of New Orleans, approach and kneel."
Beast peered out of my eyes, and I could see their yellow glow reflected in Leo's.
Leo would be mate.
Leo would be and do a lot of things if I let him. I stood and walked the few steps to the dais. I wasn't real excited about kneeling to anyone, but I was taller than Leo, even with him on the step, so it wasn't as bad as it might have been. Beast took over and dropped me, but I caught myself as she started to roll me over.
"Beast shows belly to Alpha."
"No, no freaking way." I held myself upright on my knees. Turning to the clan masters of the executive council, Leo said,
"Jane Yellow Rock cannot be bound. Jane Yellow Rock is loyal by choice. Jane Yellow Rock will know that the master of the city is loyal as well."
With his little jade-handled blade, he cut his thumb again and turned back to me. I stared at the well in blood. Crap on a cracker with toe jam, he expected me to suck his thumb, which for some bizarre reason made me think of Leo sucking on a pink pacifier, which brought a grin to my face. Suddenly I was laughing. and Beast ripped through the gray between. The half-shift was instantaneous, violent. I would have screamed with the pain, but I had no breath. My back arched, then bowed,